Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Okay, I know that you're just
dying,
bubbling up with news about your grand event at the Emmys last night. Tell us.
So again, for those of you who have not been following along, my mom, her actual 70th birthday was yesterday, which is also the 70th Emmys. So when I discovered this 9 months ago, I was determined to get her a ticket because she's obsessed with the Emmys. So got her a ticket and we went yesterday. And first of all, it was very funny. I had a makeup and hair appointment at 2 o'clock. I had my ride coming at 3. My hair and makeup appointment did not show up.
Oh, no.
I was so panicky. I did my own makeup and then I called my hairdresser. And I just want to shout out to Renee, who was amazing. And she came to my house and like did my hair and like lickety split time. So we go to the Emmys. It was incredible. And Milo from This Is Us is my biggest crush. And same with my mom. We're like fighting over him. So we go up and talk to him. And he had met my husband previously at physical therapy.
Oh, wow.
Twice. Huh. And so I said to my husband, David, if we ever run into him again, either one of us, you need to invite him to our house for dinner. So
you did?
Absolutely. Freaking-lutely.
And he's coming?
Well, we'll see about that. And my cooking, who would want to come to that?
Catered.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll come.
But yeah, exactly. So I went up to him and I said, could I get a picture? And he was like busy. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And I pulled out the picture of him and David. I said, you're going to die, but you've run into my, I don't know if you remember, but you ran into my husband twice. And he looks at the picture and he goes, Michigan? He remembered David loved Michigan. And I was like in awe. And I was like, And I literally didn't say anything. He repeated it. He's like, your husband went to Michigan, right? I'm like, oh my God. I said, yes, that's correct. And he goes, oh my God. Yeah, of course I'll take a picture with you. And then I handed him my card. I'm like, listen, I swear, I know this is crazy, but I promise, you know, myself and the rest of the world that if I ever see you or my husband does, I need you to come to my house for dinner. And I gave him my card. And that was that. So,
oh, that's so cute.
And then my mom and I went to the governor's ball and it was just incredible.
What do you do in the governor's ball?
You eat, you pretend you're hot stuff, you mingle with the celebrities, and my mom and I were just in heaven. Like, it was
where
such
was
a great,
your dad during that time?
My dad was with the other guests that we had gone to, so it was heaven. Like, I really don't know what to say other than it was just a really beautiful evening and a lot of fun. And
did you wear a long gown?
I wore a long black dress.
Uh-huh.
My mom wore a long black dress. And we just had a really bonding, fun experience. And, you know, I don't think she'll ever forget it. That was my goal.
Oh, that's so sweet. Happy birthday to your mom.
Thank you. Thanks.
Is a black dress like the in chic thing still? That's always historically what used to be at these formal
things.
Yeah,
I think you could never go wrong. I mean, I'll pull up a picture afterward and show you. But it was like it had some cutouts. So it was a little bit sexy but classy, mm-hmm. which was kind of, you know, how I wanted to roll. And yeah, so that was my evening, but I'm pretty tired too.
Good for you. Did it go late?
It didn't go that late. I mean, maybe 11:30. I was just so like pumped with adrenaline. I couldn't like sleep.
Aww.
So how about you? What's going on your end?
Oh, Chris and I went to a 3-day intensive real estate workshop, not to become brokers or anything, but just to learn more about the real estate market in terms of, you know, flipping and things like that. I don't know what aspect of it we'll get into, but it seems like something fun and something to do kind of as a hobby.
I feel like that's so your niche. Like, you're so good with that kind of stuff that's great.
I've been pretty lucky so far, maybe a little bit of knowledge, but mostly just kind of being in at the right time. So I'm going to do this on a very small scale because I don't like a lot of risk anymore in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I took many of my risks years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like, you know, my 8 of my 9 lives are,
are
done.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yes. Financial risks are sometimes just as devastating as any other
kind of
risk, right? Because you know, the older we get, the more we rely on some sense of security.
Sure.
And wanting to feel stable in an environment that gets more and more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
They said some things that were really frightening, though. Like, if you wanted to live off of $10,000 a month passive income in your retirement, you eventually have to have $6 million.
Are you kidding me?
Because of inflation and how much that money.
That's so scary.
Right? It is, right? So I'm sure that their charts were a bit inflated.
Yeah, exactly.
Make people be afraid and to dive into this thing. But anyway, I think, you know, it also gives Christopher something. He used to do real estate development years ago. So
good for
you. He knows a lot. He has a lot of knowledge base in that department. So if nothing else, it'll be fun and I'll learn a lot.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
always interesting to be able to share with people, our clients, things that, you know, mistakes that you make or things that you've learned from other people's knowledge. So this is a very comprehensive program. I'm kind of excited about just diving in and
good for you
reading all the materials. Yeah, so that was exhausting too.
Yeah, I bet
those things are so pumped up with adrenaline.
Oh my god,
they're, you know, they're there to sell you,
of course,
your system, you know.
Yeah,
so anyway, haha. So
last week
we had Dr. Adam Ghazali. He's actually an MD and a PhD and a professor of in neurology, physiology, and psychiatry. And he had a book called The Distracted Mind, Ancient Brains in a High-Tech World, which also was the winner of the 2017 Prose Award. He was just fascinating.
Really cool stuff, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
It's like,
did you find yourself more or less distracted after the interview?
Oh my God. Well, I was pretty distracted last night, so I don't know. I'm all over the place. I'm always distracted. No, I mean, it was really interesting, you know, to think about all of that. And he was a super bright guy. And yeah, so if you missed that show, that is really interesting about neurology and neuroscience and distraction and technology.
Really how the brain works and memory and, you know, things that we can do to keep our brains strong, you know, and to not... lose as many cells as some of us are prone to doing.
Yeah, exactly. With wine and other substances.
Oh my goodness. All right, you do the intro.
Sure.
I did not bring my reading glasses.
Sure. So today, I'm very excited to have Lainey Dolphin. She is the author of Have Great Dreams. And she's been interpreting her own and her clients' dreams for years. During her lectures, as well as through her books, Have a Great Dream, Book 1, The Overview, Decoding Your Dreams to Discover Your Full Potential, and its companion work, Have a Great Dream, Book 2, A Deeper Discussion, Dolphin's goal is to introduce the general public to the value of understanding their dreams. Dolphin came to her work 45 years ago after entering Freudian psychoanalysis for depression, resulting from giving birth to a daughter suffering from Down syndrome. Freudian psychoanalysis largely employs dreams as the key to unraveling the psyche. Fascinated by the process, she then enrolled at the Gestalt Counseling and Training Center certification program and advanced from there. Today, she runs the Dream Interpretation Center in Montreal, where she's been providing guidance to individuals and professional colleagues on dream analysis. While she continues to do private consultations on the phone or via Skype, Dolphin also offers workshops for those wishing to learn their own unique system. Welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting me, you guys.
Oh, we're so excited about this. So, you know, Kelly is a therapist and I'm a psychologist. And I don't know, how much do you do with dreams in your work?
A little bit. This is why I'm so excited to have this, because I want to learn more.
Yeah, but I was so excited to see that you have the Gestalt training background, because I was at the Gestalt Therapy Institute for over a year in Southern California and learned a lot about dream stuff from there, too. So I'm so excited.
Right. And I'm pretty eclectic in my approach, and I like to use Freud, Jung, Adler, and Pearl.
Wow. Okay.
And the second book actually takes those four fathers of psychology, and I only look at about six or seven dreams throughout the course of the book, because I wanted to illustrate that you could take the same dream and look at it from all these different perspectives, and you always get a prize.
Very cool.
I love it. Maybe you could tell us some of the differences between those four different components you draw from.
Well, I guess if I'd rather just give you like the backdrop so you understand where I'm coming from.
Sure.
And it's funny because I'm speaking to two people that already know exactly what I'm talking about. But for those people out there who don't, I like to say that all of us come into this world whole. We have a plethora of potential that we are born with. We have the ability to be selfish, to be giving, to be shy, to be assertive, to be a hero, to be a chicken, to be an initiator or a receiver, you know. And so we get these, the people that bring us up teach us that it's better to be one way than another way. And an easy example of that is if you grow up in a home with siblings, you probably get the message somehow that it's not okay to be selfish, because you hear sentences like, go share your toys with your brother, go look after your sister. And of course, you're sharing your parents' attention. So your whole life experience is more about giving. So that, I call it a muscle, like Frederick Perls would have called it, over-invested aspects of your personality and under-invested aspects. You know, I call it over- and under-exercised parts of ourselves. And so conversely, if you're brought up as an only child, your experience, you don't have to share your parents' attention or your toys. And so your whole life experience is more relaxed about looking after yourself and taking care of yourself. And the only problem with knee-jerk, over-invested aspects of ourself and our personality is your knee-jerk reaction might not fit what's going on this week in your life. And so the dreams, though, bring us, and it's not random, she said after 45 years. It's not random, the images that our unconscious mind chooses, because really the dream is the conversation you're having with yourself at the first level about a very specific current issue that you are attempting to problem solve. And so the images that you choose are not random, and the solution to the issue appears in the unconscious, of course, before it gets to the conscious mind. And that's what I do. I help people understand, why did I have that dream last night? What specific situation triggered this dream? And once I understand, and it's the dreamer who tells me what the dream is about, mm-hmm. and once they do, we look back in the dream to find what a solution looks like when it comes in the form of a metaphor.
So
that was a mouthful.
Yes. Oh, that was very informative. Thank you for that. Yes.
And in both of your books, you refer to the term points of entry, so you can help the dreamer decode why they had that dream. Can you tell me about that?
Excellent question. Yes. And so for uncovering or deconstructing why you had that dream last night, one of the easiest points of entry, and it's like a dance, you go in the dream, outside the dream. How did you feel in the dream? That's a main easy point of entry, is the feelings. Well, I felt frightened. So you come outside the dream and ask the dreamer, what do you think is happening in your life in the last couple of days that's making you feel anxious? And so typically, and I call this welcome to the human race, because our waking life, our conscious life, we are expert at sweeping, denying, lying, avoiding. And so if you're feeling a little anxious about something, you may not be acknowledging it at all. And because we are self-regulating organisms, whatever it is that you're underreacting to in your waking life, the dream is going to overreact. And that's the nightmare. So in the nightmare about something that's making you a little anxious in your waking life, but you're not acknowledging it, you might get a dream that scares the heck out of you. And that's the balance. That's the seesaw about trying to succeed in grabbing your attention to that issue that you're trying to look at. And then there's the action. How is the dreamer moving in the dream? And then you hear dreams like, I was trying to run away, but I couldn't because my feet were stuck. And that would inspire me doing an action point of entry. I might ask the dreamer, is there some situation that you're trying to run away from lately? And maybe the dream is providing a rehearsal to the dreamer about staying still and not running?
Ah, love it.
Or is the dream giving the dreamer a rehearsal that they actually should be mm-hmm. flying away? So you always want to check with the dreamer, because, of course, countertransference is unavoidable in dream analysis. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that any person can do is project what it would be if it was their dream, And that's kind of what I do. I'll hear different things from people. Sometimes it's repetition, like we repeat the same way as we learn in our waking life. You must remember, read it, write it, recite it. Read it, write it, recite it. And that's how we learn. Mm-hmm. And the dreams do the same function. So if I'm frightened about something, I might dream about a ghost at the beginning of the night. And what does that mean in my personal database or my personal associations? It means I'm scared. And maybe later I'll dream that I'm standing on the abyss of a cliff. And what does that mean? It means I'm scared. It's a completely different picture that's sending the same message. And maybe closer to the morning, I could dream about my grade 5 teacher. And what does that mean? It means I'm scared. So you can say something to yourself several times, and the pictures are different, but the message is the same. So if you don't get it one way, your unconscious will give it to you another way, because it wants you to get it.
So I think this would be helpful. Can I read your book, page 85, Sue's Poo Dream, which I think is really interesting. And can you kind of pick it apart a little bit for our audience and kind of maybe point out different things? I think that would be super helpful. If I can read this
What
first.
Is the dream?
Sure. So it says, Sue's Poo's Dream. I'm in a resort. I am my own age. I have a little girl with me who has blonde hair. She's 2 years old. In reality, I have a grown son, not a daughter. The resort is very busy. There are so many people there. We're in the pool and the little girl tells me she has to go potty. After we get out of the pool, my mother was suddenly with me. We were in this giant room filled with people. My mother was across the room, squatting like a Chinese person would and looking at me. The little girl is next to me and poo appears all over the place. I haven't even taken her diaper down and I start to put it into my mouth. It isn't the shape of regular poo. It's the same color as chocolate milk. I put it in my mouth and started to clean it and spit it out. And then it goes on, but maybe you can just kind of pick apart a little bit.
Well, let's just pick it up from there. Mm-hmm. I love that you chose that dream. Oh my goodness gracious, you ladies are great. And so you see that she's taking the excrement and putting it in her mouth, literally cleaning it up. And that, for that dream, what feels appropriate, like at this moment, is play on words and puns, because we use play on words and puns all the time in our dreams as much as we do in our waking life, or even the plot. The plot is that she's taking something dirty, putting it in her mouth, and cleaning it up before she spits it out. Now, if that was my dream, and my mom is gone some years now, and so is my father, but I really relate to that dreamer about having to think about what I'm going to say if it's a parental figure, that you want to clean up what you're going to say and be careful about the way you come out with it, especially if it's, like crap that you have to come out with, like something difficult, something that might be hard to say or not very pretty to say. That dreamer is using her child's excrement and putting it in her mouth and cleaning it up to help say something to herself about being careful about what she wants to say to her mom and how she's going to come out with it.
That's fascinating. Super interesting. So
isn't it?
We are talking, if you just tuned in, to Lainey Dolphin. She is the author of Have a Great Dream. There's several. The one that we're referring to is the workbook right now.
Do you believe that there are universal symbols, you know, like the old Freudian thing that, you know, a snake is an extension of your penis or something like that, versus that, that really those symbols may have some relevance universally, but that they also have a lot of individuality in terms of their meaning?
They do. And what I often tell people is that your unconscious mind is holding, it's a database, or for those of us that are over 50, like myself, I call it a filing cabinet. Mm-hmm. And every single memory and association that you have ever had since you're born is sitting there in that database. And that's the reason why you can't for sure tell a dreamer exactly what their dream is about, because each of us has, we may have similar images sometimes, but they mean something different to each and every one of us. Like, I'm just thinking, like, because we were just, you were asking me about this woman that's cleaning something up before she spits it out. And a good example of dreams that happen to lots of different people is teeth falling out. Mm. And it's true that all of us lose our teeth when we're 6 or 7 years old. And that's true for all human beings. Something that's the inevitable, and it's definitely something that we have no control over. And so one person might dream that their teeth are falling out. I know one woman not that long ago that was dreaming her teeth were falling out because she knew inside that her boyfriend was about to end that relationship. She could feel it. She wasn't acknowledging it in her waking life, but inside she knew that this was something inevitable, and it was something that she had absolutely no control over. And she was dreaming about her teeth falling out. Mm-hmm. Where somebody like my husband, who's turning 60 in a couple of days, he might dream that his teeth are falling out, and it'll be a comment about transition. Also unavoidable, but transition. So sometimes it's about spitting something out of your mouth, something that you have to say, or maybe it's about you're considering how you look or how you're appearing, which is also something similar that each of us might go through when we are 6 or 7, thinking about how we look without our two front teeth, you know, mm-hmm. like that kind of thing. So you always want to discuss with the dreamer. It's not a psychic thing. It's a psychological thing where you want to be able to interview the dreamer to find out what their mm-hmm. associations are.
I wanted to talk a little bit about like imposter dreams in terms of like occasionally I'll have a dream that I'm back in high school. I forgot to take a class and then I am no longer going to have my PhD. And I'm like terrified about it in the dream. Like I literally wake up and go, wait, I didn't. They didn't take that away from me. Do you want to say something? And I know a lot of people that have those kinds of, they're successful.
Yes,
but then
definitely.
They fear, yeah.
Where you know that you're equipped somewhere inside. I have 4 daughters. Actually, my eldest daughter passed away a few years ago, but my daughters ran in age. There's a 20-year spread between them,
wow.
like from 45 all the way down to 25. So I could tell you that I feel like I have a PhD in parenting because I've been through the ringer for a couple of years here, and I feel very prepared and confident. But what if one of those girls, and I'm sure you appreciate that this happens all the time, that one of those lovely women will come up with, I'll get into a situation where, frankly, I'm not really sure how to proceed. And that might trigger a dream where I'm back at school and I thought, you know, I can't find the exam room. Mm. And I thought I had studied and I yeah. thought I had everything prepared, and yet I feel unprepared, and that's a feeling that you can get fairly often with kids mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter how old they are.
Yes.
So that's the kind of situation that might trigger a dream like that.
Okay,
so just
I'll
not feeling
more
prepared
to yeah. that when it happens. Yeah.
And what about like reoccurring dreams? So a reoccurring dream that I constantly had when I was little was that I was going to get robbed, and I would see the robber in my home, and it was just one of those terrifying dreams that would just happen over and over again.
Right. And when a dream happens over a lifetime, a long period of time that keeps coming back every now and then. I call that a favorite expression. And so my favorite expression is, oh, darn it, which it's not because it's worse than that. But we're on the radio, so we'll keep
you can
it
say
clean.
Anything you want. This and is so, internet.
Yeah. And I could have said, oh, darn it, 40 years ago because I missed the bus. And I could have said, oh, darn it, 3 months ago because I knocked papers off the desk. And I could have said, oh, darn it, 20 minutes ago because I was worried about talking on a cell or on a landline. And so I'm using the same expression over a period of years about situations that have absolutely nothing in common with each other. But if you have a dream, let's say 7 times over the last 3 weeks, that would be the same thing as a nightmare. That's your unconscious mind succeeding in grabbing your attention to a life, waking life matter that needs your attention. Mm-hmm. And so you're dreaming about being robbed. So one, you said that you had it as a child. Mm-hmm. It was more a childhood recurring, right?
Yes, correct.
And so, you know, I guess I'm looking at the plot. And isn't it so true anyways, when you don't even know the person or the dreamer or the life? Isn't it kind of true that when we are children, we really don't have that much control and our self that wants to speak up and take action really is kind of robbed for a couple of years until we get to the place.
Yes.
You know, like we could say that my freedom was robbed because if my dad was yelling at me when I was 7 or 8 years old, I couldn't say to him, excuse me, I don't like how you're talking to me, mm-hmm. because that would have been considered disrespectful and I probably would have landed in my room. So my voice got robbed.
Yes.
We're going to blame this one on your brother. Right?
I've got a whole laundry list of people I'm thinking of right now. But, you know, that makes complete sense to me because I did feel pretty powerless. And I would also have dreams where I remember having a dream where I would be screaming and nothing would be coming out of my mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely my point. Mm-hmm. And that is another extension or metaphor. That's a fantastic metaphor for, you know, the questions I ask the dreamer with that dream. Or is it that you're trying to speak and you don't feel like anybody's listening to you?
Yes.
Or is it that you have something to say and you're not coming out with it? You're not using your voice. Mm-hmm. And so all of these things, I mean, Adler would have said, where Freud was looking in the back, where did I get that from? Well, I got it from my European father or my brother or whoever. He would be looking into the past, Freud. And Alfred Adler would have been more future-oriented, and he said, the dream gives rise to an emotion that helps you move forward towards the goal. And in this case, the frustration of you screaming in the dream and no sound coming out would hopefully encourage you to speak up in your waking life. Mm. It's kind of sort of propelling you to move forward.
I love that.
I love that too. Yeah. Now here's one that happens for me sometimes and it really upsets me. I want to stay in the dream where I'm speaking a foreign language perfectly. Mm. And I wake up and I'm like, Dad, I don't even know one word out of that language. And I was absolutely fluent.
Wow.
What do you think that implies?
But you know, if I, you know, sorry to use those daughters, if they were all here, I would say, sorry. Or like my granddaughter says, sorry. But if somebody comes out, like, you know, someone who, it's like one of the daughters is very comfortable being accommodating. And if she all of a sudden comes out with something that is completely, wow, like way out of character, I might dream about her speaking a foreign language. Or if I behave in a certain way that's not my typical knee-jerk reaction, then I might dream that I'm talking a foreign language. Or am I talking a foreign language because I'm conversing with people and I don't think they're getting me. I actually don't feel like they're getting me. And then that might trigger a dream where I'm speaking another language.
That
but I think
sense.
The most important thing that I can cannot impress enough is that I'm not here to say that change is easy, because it's not, but change is absolutely possible. And all these underinvested aspects of our personality, the under-exercised parts, or Jung would have called them your shadows, as opposed to what, you know, Freud called repetition compulsion, about always doing your knee-jerk reaction. The point is, you don't have to keep doing your knee-jerk reaction. You can actually practice unexercised aspects of your personality. So, for example, the woman who's actually a radio personality, who is dreaming that she's being chased by a rhinoceros, here we have a polarity, which is another point of entry, where the person who's being chased is like the victim, kind of, and the rhinoceros is this huge, powerful part of herself that she is disconnected from, because her ego is taking the part in the dream that's afraid and running away. And the big, powerful part of her side, mm-hmm. her shadow, is chasing her. And you want to get closer to the shadow part of yourself. So the part of the dream that makes you feel the most uncomfortable, that's the part of the dream that you want to reach towards. So she's not going to become a rhinoceros overnight. But if she understands that that is the solution to the issue, then maybe she's going to, and you can do this while you're awake. It's Jung called it active imagination. It's very behavioral. And I love behavioral, because that's how change happens, is that you can access just a little bit of the rhinoceros in you, just that power. Mm-hmm. And maybe whatever the situation is, you want to try and access a little bit of that. Because you can take all your parts back. And once you do that, you are in a very powerful position. Because, I mean, if I want to be on my bank manager's good side, then if I have an unexercised voice, then my knee-jerk reaction might be appropriate with him. But is it appropriate if my husband Andy opens up a big mouth to me? No, it's not appropriate. He's my equal. I need to find my voice. Mm-hmm. And so you can choose what response you are going to have to people and situations. And then nobody really knows necessarily what to expect from you. You move out of that thing, oh, she's going to take it because she always takes it. Or she's going to say yes because she always says yes.
So, okay, this is fascinating, but I imagine a lot of listeners are wondering, okay, but what if, how do I remember my dreams? And so I'm wondering if you can give us maybe a quick tip or two on how to remember dreams.
Okay, well, the first is intention. Intention counts for so much. And if you put paper and pen beside the bed and you make a decision that you're going to remember a dream, and also you don't say to yourself that you need a dream that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. A one-picture dream, like the woman being chased by a rhinoceros, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. It says so much. So you want to just catch the one image, or even the feelings. How did I feel when I woke up? So don't set the expectation so high that you need to get the whole thing. But you can even imagine yourself waking up in the morning and reaching for the pen and start to write before you get off the bed. You have to start writing right away,
right?
Because there's a memory trace. It's not working at the same capacity when you're asleep as when you're awake. And I'll just tell you my favorite. My favorite comes from Robbie Bosnack. You could sit and in a chair and take your watch off and look at your watch very carefully, and then close your eyes and picture your watch, the hands moving, what it looks like, and then open your eyes and look at the watch again, and then do the same exercise in a room. Look all around the room. Take a note of the pictures, the paintings, the ashtrays, everything in the room, and then close your eyes and walk around the room in your mind's eye. And this exercise gets you to the right feeling of being inside a dream, outside the dream, inside, outside. And that's what I do. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'll say to myself, where were you? And you'd be surprised how it starts to come back to you where you were.
That's awesome. Yeah. I wanted to ask you something about from the Gestalt therapy that I had, the training, that one of the things that they said is all aspects of every dream are some split off part of yourself. And that when somebody's describing a dream, have them actually identify and speak from each of the different parts. So like,
yes.
What would it be like to be the rhinoceros? What does it feel like? What is the rhinoceros?
Exactly.
What's your association to it?
And the reason... Exactly. And the reason why I'm so eclectic and why I studied these different fathers of psychology is because for me, any knowledge is good. So if you're a person like my husband, who's dreaming that he was flying on a cow last night, he doesn't want to talk to me about how that reflects his early childhood relationship with his mother.
Right.
He just wants to know why I was flying on a cow and now I have to go to work. So just tell me why I was flying on a cow last night.
I love it.
So cute.
So he doesn't want to be the cow.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Because if I tell him to be the cow, he's going to tell me where what to be. And so, but a person like me, I want to know why I was flying on a cow. I also want to know how, what does that relate to from my childhood? What's that about? And, you know, why was I, and do I want to still be like that now, today at 66? So I'm going to ask all those deep questions, but not everybody wants to do that. But if you want to do Gestalt, it is unbelievable what it reveals. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I had a woman just this morning who was talking about the head of an elephant. There's no blood or anything. It's the head of an elephant on a table. And all of a sudden, the elephant starts to talk to her. And I asked her to be the elephant. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm almost extinct.
Mm. Wow.
And yeah, and there was that element where you wouldn't be expecting me to speak. But I am speaking because she is speaking in the dream. The elephant is speaking.
And
so, that's what you can get with a Gestalt approach. Mm-hmm. It gets you right where you need to go, sometimes very quickly.
And what about dreams as a premonition? So I remember when I was in college, I had a dream that my mom had cancer and I was crying and I was so upset. Turns out a few years later, she got cancer. So I'm just curious, like, if there's any correlation on that front, or is it just coincidence, or what your thoughts are?
Well, I don't really believe in coincidence. And while my work in teaching, I mean, really, dreams are really just a language, because dreaming is just thinking. It's not rocket science, it's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But you're thinking in another language of pictures and metaphors. And so, oh my God, can you believe that I just forgot what? Oh yeah, right. You're talking about premonitions. And so I'm psychological in my approach at work, but I am a spiritual person, and I absolutely believe there's so much more going on than you and I give even a part of it credit for. And I think we are simultaneously working through several things at the same time. We're multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
So, I often use as an example, when I go away on a business trip, I bring, I might bring my father into the dream because he represents the side of me, my male business side of myself. And I need to access that characteristic because that's who helps me get on the plane and go away from the kids and the grandchildren. But how do you and I know that it's not also my father really visiting me?
Right.
And this is kind of similar. Like, I think it's possible that you may have been dreaming that your mom had cancer, and in a metaphoric way, maybe you were discussing with yourself a breakdown in some way of your relationship with her and where it was at, or maybe there was something eating at you that you were holding in that was getting bigger, that was growing.
Mm.
So maybe there's some discomfort or some unhealthiness that was growing at the time you had the dream. Mm-hmm. And you could have just been an observer. By the way, it sounds like you were an observer in that dream, mm-hmm. not a participant.
Yes.
And maybe you were watching your mother hold something in or do something that was not good for herself. And because no change was taking place, maybe you saw that as some kind of cancerous growth. Mm. And yet it turned out to be the real deal years later.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow.
And I see that all the time. I see it all the time in dreams where somebody, I mean, I remember somebody dreaming about the Tok family looking for shelter. And it turned out to be about the fact that she knew the Tok family from when she was at camp, which was the same place she met her boyfriend. And it was about, the dream was about her having to talk to her boyfriend. And she used the metaphor of that family, using a play on words, to say something to herself about needing to talk to her boyfriend. This was back in 1997. And I still remember that the dreamer, because the ice storm happened in Montreal in 1997. It also happened in upstate New York. And the lights went out for like a month. Mm-hmm. There was no electricity. And this woman went to a hotel looking for a shelter and ran into the Tok family, who she had not seen for like 8 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so that's a good case of a psychological reason that was inspiring. It linked her to her boyfriend, which is where they met at that camp. And it also at the same time captured something that was about to happen 2 weeks later.
Wow. Maybe, Lainey, you could tell us a little bit about how you came about being so interested in dream analysis. Is there a childhood story about that?
Well, the childhood story is an excellent one because my dad was the one that used to wake up in the middle of the night. My mom was more a morning person, and he was more the middle of the night. It was easy for him to get up. And if I had nightmares, and I have incredible dream recall, and I have since I'm a child, and instead of saying to me, which you should never say this to a kid, oh, it was just a dream, go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. My father used to sit on the side of the bed and he would say to me, tell me the dream.
Wow.
And he gave me the audience for the whole story. And then he would say to me, okay, you're going to go back to sleep now, but as you're falling asleep, you're going to say, I'm going to have a nightmare. Bring it on. I'm going to have a nightmare and I'm ready for it. And of course, I would never have a nightmare after that.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
So it comes from my past. But after I gave birth to Tina, I had my eldest daughter 2 weeks after I turned 21. And I wasn't at that time in my life so well able to articulate my feelings. And I ended up, after about 3 months, I ended up in psychoanalysis with a brilliant Freudian analyst who had moved here from New York. And I wasn't able to articulate my feelings, but I used to go into the sessions always with a dream.
Mm.
And he probably did about 80% of my psychoanalysis was done through dream interpretation. So my first experience, like before I studied Freud, I experienced him.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was a dream, a series of a recurring dream that I had in my first 4 months of psychoanalysis that absolutely led me to change my existing relationship with that daughter, because I had mm-hmm. given her up. It's like 46 years ago that this story is that I'm talking about. But 46 years ago, most people had their Down's children placed. They didn't bring mm-hmm. them home. Today, everybody brings their baby home.
Right.
But back then, it was more typical to have your child placed in an institution.
Wow.
Which I did. And a couple of months later, I started having a recurring dream about a freight elevator. And the freight elevator dreams for me were about insecurity, because that wobbly floor, you know, how the floor on a freight elevator moves?
Sure.
And there's a huge space, and I'm in the freight elevator alone. And the solution, just because I don't want to ever leave you without showing you what solutions look like when they come in the form of a metaphor. And the solution to the freight elevator dream was to take the picture of the dream out into waking life and make a decision about what the solution is. So for me personally, the freight elevator dream, the solution was to invite people into the elevator. Because by bringing people into the elevator, you put weight on the floor and the floor stops wobbling. And the other thing is the space becomes smaller. It's not a big wide space where you can't even hold on to the walls. And freight elevators in my personal database are linked. Again, I don't know, it's like so funny that it's like, what is going on here today with me and my father? But I link freight elevators to my dad, because when I was a little girl, I used to go with him to the warehouse on Saturdays, and there was a freight elevator there that would make me feel uncomfortable and not secure, but he was there with me, and so it was always okay. And I invited my parents to come find Tina, and I brought her back in my life. She was a huge part of my life after that. And it was the freight elevator dreams and the analysis of those dreams that encouraged me to invite my parents to come and visit Tina with me and see what's happening with her and continue to have her in my life.
Oh, that is so touching.
Beautiful.
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful.
So we're...
That was quite something.
You're not going to believe this, but we're out of time. We've been talking with Lainey Dolphin. She is the author of Have a Great Dream, the workbook, and just so fascinating.
Like, that's spelled D-A-L-F-E-N, not like the beautiful dolphins
right.
in the sea.
But I love...
And you can always find me at haveagreatdream.com.
Perfect.
Beautiful. Are there any other things you're promoting, like Dreaminars or anything like that?
I'm actually going to be on October 28th. I'm giving a full day workshop at the Open Center in New York City.
Oh, beautiful.
Very cool.
How fun.
And people can just call
you. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm speaking at the New Life Expo on the 27th and on the 28th. And you could see it if you go to haveagreatdream.com. That's for people that live around the New York area. They may want to come and join me for a day.
And independent of that, so people can just call you and say, hey, you know, can I have a consultation on a dream that I've been having? And you can just kind of do a one-off?
That's what people do.
Fantastic. That's so awesome. Thank you so
much. Yeah, because I only work with dreams. And if the dreams are very upsetting, they usually give you a warning that maybe you want to be going into therapy. And that's when I call you guys.
That's great.
Love it. Love it.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lainey. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's just fascinating.
Yeah.
I
it's
love
so
dream
interesting.
Stuff.
Yeah. Well, she's really good at analyzing. I mean, there's so much there.
Yeah. So well-rounded in that area. I learned a few new things too.
Yeah.
Which is
me too.
Awesome. Yes. All right. So next week we have Kevin Murphy, The Three Rooms.
Past, present, and future.
Okay.
That's what I was looking at. So that should be really cool.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Have a good week. You come off your high from your Emmy.
As you can tell, I'm going to probably take a nap. It's hitting me. But,
all right. Do follow us on Instagram at Two Shrinks, Facebook, The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Always visit our website, docandtherapist.com. And we love hearing from you. So thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.